This is the Deep Side of Dallas. I'm Rudy Bush, Deputy Editorial Page Editor for the Dallas Morning News.
And I'm Paul Corliss, Chief Communications Officer for the University of North Texas System.
On the Deep Side, we dive into local news and issues through candid conversations with people making an impact in Dallas and beyond.
Welcome to the Deep Side of Dallas podcast. I'm Paul Corliss, Chief Communications Officer for the University of North Texas System, here as always with my co-host Rudy Bush of the Dallas Morning News. For decades, the city of Dallas has been separated by a north-south divide. The booming neighborhoods of North Dallas represent the city's traditional areas of wealth, while the city's southern regions have lagged behind the north in economic growth and opportunity. Our guests for this episode of the podcast are working to bridge the gap between the north and south in Dallas. Central to their efforts is a $200 million redevelopment of Redbird Mall, an iconic spot in southern Dallas that they are working to transform into a mixed-use center of economic opportunity. Joining us today are Peter Brodsky, owner and developer of Redbird Mall, and Terrence Maiden, a native of Oak Cliff who serves as CEO for local real estate development firm Russell Glenn. Peter, Terrence, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, guys. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad we're talking about the redevelopment of Redbird. It's something that has been talked about for a long time. And as Paul alluded to in his introduction, Dallas has this serious geographical gap in terms of its ability to develop its southern half, even though it's a beautiful part of the city in terms of just its geography. It's a part of the city that has a lot of available land that could be developed. And when people talk about the barriers to redevelopment, they don't often get into all the opportunities, but you guys are two folks who have seen the opportunities there. And the other thing is, whenever I hear people talk about the possibility of Southern Dallas, usually Redbird Mall is somewhere in that discussion, either as a cautionary tale or as a possibility. But I wanted to just back up a little bit, and Terrence, I know you grew up in Oak Cliff, as Paul mentioned, and this is an area that was familiar to you as a child. So Redbird opened in 1975, I think. It was a property owned for a long time by the DiBartolo family. What do you remember about the mall as a kid?
Well, first of all, Rudy, Oak Cliff is home for me, and I have very fond memories at Redbird Mall growing up. You know, it was the place of activity. It was the place where, you know, a lot of me and my peers would hang out at. It was the fun spot to be, and it was that way for a lot of African Americans in that community. It was also a sense of pride. You know, it was kind of the mall for our community. And even till today, you know, when I share that I'm, you know, involved in Redbird, even not only locally, but even when I'm traveling, people recognize Redbird Mall. So that speaks to the sort of impact that the mall has had on the community for many, many years. And, you know, it's been a real privilege to work with Peter to really execute on this vision that we're putting forth, and it's been an exciting project to take on, and it makes me feel really good personally to come back home and to realize something that has been talked about for right. many, many years for the community.
Well, let's lay out a little bit of the economic history, Peter, because you got involved in this sort of as an investor somewhere around 2015, if I'm right about that, but there was a long history prior to your involvement that kind of took the mall to a place where it was considered maybe an untouchable investment by a lot of folks. So just walk us through the economics of the thing from its opening till you got involved.
Sure. First of all, thanks for the opportunity to be here today. If I could, can I go back a little bit
sure.
further than that? You know, you talked about the economic divide between North and South in Dallas, and this leads directly into your characterization that Redbird was viewed as kind of an untouchable asset. It's important to understand that that divide didn't just happen by accident. That divide was the result of some intentional policies by the city of Dallas over decades to invest in the North and starve the South for capital. And the best example that I can give of that is you take the LBJ loop. In the north, it's called 635. In the south, they don't even call it the same thing. It's called I-20. It's part of the loop,
right,
but it's a different highway. 635 has exits frequently with service roads. I-20 had no exits in the city of Dallas when it was built, and therefore no service roads. Think about all the development that happened along the service roads of LBJ where it's 635. Offices, apartments, retail centers. People got off the highway, they went right into a development. Southern Dallas, you couldn't even get off the highway. Then they added a couple of exits, no service roads. So that's one of about 1,000 different decisions that were made to differentiate north from south. And the result was that there was almost no development in Southern Dallas. When you stand on the roof of Redbird Mall, which is only two stories, you can see downtown. Redbird Mall and the Galleria are equidistant from downtown. I guarantee you, if you're on the second floor of the Galleria, you cannot see downtown. There's too many buildings in the way. So those policies have long since ended.
And you were probably going to say this, but I don't believe there was an exit for Redbird Mall.
There are four potential places where there could be exits: north and south on 67 and east and west on 20, because we're at the intersection. Only on the southbound side of 67 is there an exit. Although I will say that was the case when the mall was built. Mm-hmm. It's not like the mall was there and then they intentionally built a highway with no exit. So that one I can't blame anyone. That has been a problem with the mall that's being rectified now. But the point is that even though those policies have ended, first of all, a vicious cycle was started where it's difficult to do development, and so no one wants to do development. And then the second thing is there's a general hangover. And the hangover is don't go down there. You don't want to develop there. I mean, I moved here in 1995, and I didn't go to Southern Dallas other than once a year for the fair for the first 15 years, because all I heard was, don't go there. You don't want to go there. I had no idea what there was. I thought there was like a little neighborhood. I had no idea it was 208 square miles, bigger than all of Atlanta, bigger than North Dallas, 40% of the population, more than half of the land mass of the city, that I was not supposed to go to. So the entire Southern Dallas has a hangover. The entire Southern Dallas is viewed as untouchable. And what Terrence and I saw, Terrence knew it from growing up there, and I saw it from getting to know the community, is that the area that Redbird Mall sits in is a very solidly middle-class part of Oak Cliff. It's proximate to the suburbs, which are quite well-to-do, Cedar Hill, DeSoto, et cetera. And yet the amenities in it were very low quality. So to get directly to your question, the economics are that the Redbird Mall thrived for a long time, for 20 or 25 years. When in the mid to late 90s, there were some, the area became, had more crime. There were some crime incidents in the parking field. There was a murder across the street at a Mervyn's. And at the same time, the people who had grown up in Oak Cliff were moving further south in search of a better school system. And when folks started to move to Cedar Hill and DeSoto, Duncanville, Lancaster, eventually Dillard's and JCPenney, which were two of the anchors of the mall, followed. Mm-hmm. So they closed at Redbird and they moved to Cedar Hill. And once a mall loses two of its anchors, it's not a thriving mall. And from there, it just kind of got passed from hand to hand to hand, and it was treated like a mall that was not worthy of reinvestment. And so it produced cash flow. It was cash flowing the day I bought it 6 years ago. But the owners skimmed the cash flow, put nothing back into it, so it began to look worse and worse. The parking fields began to deteriorate. It was dirty. It wasn't well lit. And so, of course, that's not helping anything. And it kind of got into this death spiral, but it never died. And it never died because it's the only covered mall in Southern Dallas. There are not a lot of shopping opportunities. And because of what Terrence talked about, which is the nostalgia and the emotional resonance that Redbird has with the community as a place that once was a high point of quality. And so those are the assets that we saw as really very positive, despite the fact that everyone I know told me I was crazy to invest in Southern Dallas and that it was a surefire way to lose money.
Well, and I wanted to backtrack on your exposure to Southern Dallas. So you get here in 95, you're a transplant from the East Coast. I'm similar. I came here from Chicago. I went to college in Fort Worth, but I have lived in Dallas a couple times, and I was never exposed to Southern Dallas until I started working for UNT and went to UNT Dallas. I just had no idea, right? What exposure did you have down there, and what kind of, I guess, pulled at your heartstrings or whatever to get you involved in not just development, but you're involved in the community too?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it boils down to one thing. I took the Leadership Dallas class that the Dallas Regional Chamber has, and that thing changed my life. My 19-year-old daughter actually said to me the other day, "I think Leadership Dallas changed your life." It really did. It exposed me to parts of the city that I had never been exposed to. It exposed me to people that I would never have been exposed to. Dallas is so segregated racially and socioeconomically that unless you make a particular effort to expose yourself, you can go about your merry way and never see anyone who's any different from you for your entire life. And I know a lot of people in North Dallas, they've never even left their zip code, you know. Grew up, went to HP, went to SMU, bought a house right in HP. And so that exposure opened my eyes to what the city was. And yeah, at first I started getting involved philanthropically in Southern Dallas because, you know, I wanted to give back to the community. But you spend enough time there, you realize, like, Southern Dallas, Mike Rawlings always used to say, Southern Dallas isn't a charity case. And it became very apparent to me that while there's a lot of need in Southern Dallas and North Dallas as well, there's also economic opportunities. And the biggest economic opportunity that was apparent to me was a supply-demand imbalance. There was a demand for quality amenities. But if you wanted them, you live in that area and you want them, you got to drive a long way. And so that's a hole in the market, and that's how you make money, is investing where there's a commercial hole.
Well, it was interesting you said Southern Dallas is not a charity case, because I feel like a lot of times I do hear speakers or people connected to the Southern Dallas community that treat it like that. And Terrence, you know, you grew up in Oak Cliff, Southern Dallas. What's your perspective on that? Because there's many times where I feel like I do hear it positioned as a charity case.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's very relevant. I think there is a balance, right? There are some pockets of Oak Cliff that are desperately in need of services that could benefit from philanthropic sort of donations and support. But there is a large percentage of Southern Dallas that are well-to-do families that are, as Peter mentioned, looking for quality amenities that they can go out and experience, whether it's, you know, the access to better health care, if it's access to a grocery store, and not having to travel miles to get the sort of daily needs. And so I think it's a fine balance where you do have to, you know, realize that there are areas of improvement and where the nonprofit community could really come in and work alongside, you know, the for-profit investors. But, you know, figuring that balance out is what's going to keep Southern Dallas moving forward in a positive way.
Yeah, so, you can't philanthropy your way out of this problem.
Right.
This problem was caused by the fact that that part of the city was denied development. And yes, there's some areas that are desperately in need of philanthropy, but they're also in need of jobs. You know, you look at the office space in this city. You tell me, you besides B of A Tower, you name one office building in Southern Dallas.
Well, that's a big part of the challenge I think you guys are facing, and I see this whenever I see a project in Southern Dallas that gets some buzz or some excitement around it. The project not only has to be successful in itself, it suddenly has to be this multiplier that is almost like a savior. And, oh, it's going to be Redbird's going to come back, or the Trinity Forest Golf Course and the Byron Nelson is going to spur all of this new development, or how can we have Bishop Arts 2, you know, just somewhere else just south of there. So I guess, how do you look at the project, what success means for Redbird? And Terrence, I know you're in this space, mm-hmm. and your company is in this space. Mm-hmm. You're the CEO of Russell Glenn. What does success look like for Redbird to you, and how much pressure should there be for it to be a multiplier in the area?
I think that's a great question. I'm not sure if Peter and I will totally understand success or may even not see it. I mean, I think what we've done was definitely created an opportunity to provide quality amenities for this community. I also believe what we're seeing across the country with repositioning malls, I think our strategy was spot on. And the most refreshing thing is having Peter at the table, who's not in real estate, because he brought a very fresh perspective to our strategy that traditional developers would go in and just try to see how can we get as much NOI as quickly as possible and get out of this, where Peter was committed and devoted to this project long term. And so that enabled us to make some very intentional decisions that I think is going to make the mall successful long term. And so my hope is that some of the things that we have put in place with bringing major health systems in, you know, the idea of bringing more family-oriented entertainment, public green spaces, restaurants, those things will be able to thrive for years and years to come, but also to be a catalyst, right, for everything else that's happening around us. And I think that's the real win. And that's why I hope, you know, 20 years, 30 years from now, we will start seeing high rises in the southern half of Dallas. And I think that's the win.
Well, and you're alluding to that, the strategy, but in a nutshell, what is the strategy?
The strategy was to have one point on the horizon that we were focused on, and that was provide quality to the community. And the reason we were able to do that is because the investor group started out as just me and my wife, and now we've got a group of about 20 investors. We've raised about $30 million of equity capital. Everyone's patient. Most real estate funds, you have to invest and exit within 5 years because investors want their capital back and the sponsor wants to skim their carried interest and move on with life. Everybody in this deal has a 15 to 20 year horizon. And so the strategy is don't make short-term decisions based on what's going to maximize net operating income, but be very selective about which tenants you allow into the development to make sure that you're creating the environment that you want to create. And, you know, for me, I agree with you, Rudy, that a lot of these developments have a lot of pressure on them. And I don't think that's fair because it's a huge area. And, you know, if a development in Vickery Meadow fails, it doesn't have anything to do with the view of Preston Hollow, which is 2 miles away. Right. But so I don't know what a development in Redbird has to do with Fair Park, which is 10 miles away, but it does in people's minds. And so I do think that Redbird does have pressure on it to prove that development in Southern Dallas is viable, and in particular, development that is aiming to serve the people who already live in Southern Dallas. All the other developments you mentioned, Bishop Arts, the Trinity Golf Club, golf course, Trinity Groves. Those are all about attracting people from outside of Southern Dallas, north, to come, eat, play golf, and then go home. We're not trying to do that. We're trying to serve an existing population. And if we are successful, and I think, you know, knock on wood, it feels like we're heading that way, then the next developer won't have such a hard time making that leap. The next restaurant won't have such a hard time making that leap. And the next bank that needs to finance these deals won't have such a hard time making the leap that something in Southern Dallas can be successful. And so I do think that we are paving the way. And so to me, success is a vibrant, financially successful community that cash flows and provides a return on investment, does it the right way, and creates a model that others can duplicate in other places in the city.
So just let's give our listeners a picture of where we are now. 5-6 years ago, what progress has been made? What tenants are there? What renovations have happened? What's the picture look like today?
You want to take that?
I can. Yeah, it's been a labor of love, but we have made some great strides. The bigger announcements that we made was Chime coming in out of Atlanta, the customer service call center, which will employ about 2,000 people from the community, which was a huge win for us. Also being successful with landing Parkland, UT Southwestern, and Children's to provide, you know, more access to healthcare. It's going to drive more traffic into the project, and those are really our anchors. And that's not only happening at Redbird. We're starting to see that dynamic across the country where some of these former anchor buildings are being reimagined as healthcare. But, you know, kudos to UT Southwestern and Parkland and Children's for stepping up to plant a flag in Southern Dallas. The other things that we're doing, we sold to Palladium to open 300-unit luxury apartment homes, and they're at like 95%, even maybe 100% occupancy. So they're doing well. Starbucks open is one of the best performing Starbucks in our city. So all of that points to the fact, and I think Peter mentioned this, that you can open here and be very successful as a business. And we have a lot more announcements that we're anticipating making over the next few months. But things are going well.
Hotel on the horizon too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a deal with a hotel developer to bring a half Marriott Courtyard, half Residence Inn, 150-room hotel. It would be the only branded hotel anywhere in the area in the city of Dallas. We will, certainly by this time next year, if not earlier, we will have completely renovated the entire site, replaced the entire parking field, all the underground infrastructure, put in landscaping, concrete parking fields, new lighting. We will have renovated three of the main buildings. We may or may not have gotten to one last one. But the main mall, the former Sears, which is becoming UT Southwestern, and the former Dillard's, which is Parkland and some other tenants, will all have been reskinned to, you know, look nice. We will have demolished a bunch of the mall. And now we are getting calls from restaurants. There were no sit-down restaurants anywhere near here. And now we are getting actually people are calling us saying, hey, I want to open at Redbird. That is huge. 6 years ago, when we tried to attract restaurants, we were laughed at. And the best story I've got about it is that Terrence was talking to a restaurant, and they were like, "We're not going there. No one's gonna buy a meal there." And Terrence said, "Well, look, we have a Starbucks opening. So how about I call you back in 6 months to a year and tell you how that's going?" He was like, "If Starbucks does well, I'll believe it." So 6 months to a year later, he calls back and he goes, "Starbucks is killing it." And the guy goes, "Starbucks does well everywhere."
You can't win, Terrence. Maybe this isn't your guy. Peter, you've said that. Let me ask this question because, look, I've been around the block a little bit with city politics and city hall and development. And one of the things that I have heard time and again, and whether it's true or not, I think depends on who you're talking to, but that it is very difficult in a lot of ways to do business politically and bureaucratically when you cross the river for whatever reason. Have you found it more difficult to do business in revitalizing Redbird?
Well, keep in mind, I don't have anything to compare it to because I never did development north. But I can speak to it without a comparison. I will say that the city can be very complicated to deal with. It's a very complicated system of government, the single-member district and the weak mayor. And I understand why it evolved that way. But it does make it, it can make it, you got a lot of people you have to convince of everything. I think that Mike Rawlings did a phenomenal job of helping not only the city bureaucracy, but also the citizenry understand that if we don't develop Southern Dallas, the city's future is imperiled because you can't, it's unsustainable to have half the city contributing 15% of the tax base. That is not sustainable. And so I think that there was a huge amount of goodwill at the city towards this project, and still is, that has helped. The other thing is that we happen to have a very tenacious councilman for the district, Tanel Atkins, who has been a real champion of the project, and he's good at getting things done in City Hall. I will say I was warned by a lot of people when I got into this project, ooh, every developer that tries to do Southern Dallas ends up in jail. You better be careful. And I will say that I have never, ever been even made uncomfortable by any conversation I've had with a government official. I mean, not even close. That has not been a problem for me at all. So I can't speak to other people's experiences, but so despite the difficulties and the bureaucracy, the city's really come through for us. And a lot of the myths that I heard about how, you know, oh, you're going to, everyone's going to have their hand out, there's bribe this, bribe that, none of that happened. None of that happened.
The one thing I'll add to Peter's point is, you know, one of the things that he did very early in the process was reach out to the community. And having grown up in that area, I can tell you that that was critical.
There are some people with opinions.
There's a lot of people with opinions. There's a level of distrust, especially a white developer coming into Oak Cliff and, you know, buying our prize asset and going to redevelop it. But Peter went the right road and having several community meetings and making sure everyone had a voice at the table went a long way with getting political support.
How much have you helped open doors for Peter? And even going back, how did you guys even come together?
You know, we work well in tandem. Peter has a very analytical approach to this project, which I think has really helped us out a lot. You know, I think I have a lot of passion just because I care deeply about this community. You know, as far as timing, when Peter and I, when I heard that he purchased the mall, I'm like, who is this guy that's bought Redbird? Because at the time I was working with Frank Mialopoulos, and he and I was actually very interested in Redbird Mall. And I think I reached out to you first, Peter. For
I think the city actually put us together.
Oh,
it
really?
It was Hammond Perot.
Okay, wow. Yeah, so we had our first meeting and just really hit it off. And I think I mentioned this earlier, but I really appreciated the fact that he wasn't in real estate because it took someone with a fresh perspective to come into this to really have the right sort of commitment level. And fortunately, Frank and I were finishing up the Glen Oaks Crossing, the Walmart project in Southern Dallas. So I had the bandwidth to take on another project, so the timing was great.
You know, I want to put in 2 cents just based on the idea of how supposedly hard it is to get things done in Southern Dallas versus the rest of the city. You know, when Valley View takes years and years and sits more or less like a bombed out disaster site, nobody talks about it being hard to do business in the north. So I do feel like there's constant you always have to do twice as well and get half the credit, is my sense of what goes on south. Maybe you guys have something to say about that?
100%. I mean, I'll say two things. One is just in general, the comment I made earlier about, you know, what does Redbird have to do with Fair Park? It's like, in everyone's mind, all of Southern Dallas is monolithic and it's exactly the same thing. There's no acknowledgement of how huge it is, diverse population, socioeconomically, racially diverse. Pleasant Grove and Oak Cliff have nothing to do with each other. They are so, so different. But one thing happens in Southern Dallas and the entire area is painted with it. And so you're right, Valley View sat, you know, with nothing going on. Nobody is saying, oh, North Dallas isn't viable.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like that old headline, murder in Oak Cliff. Where?
Yeah, exactly.
You don't know where the murder was. It was in Oak Cliff.
It was in Oak Cliff, which
could
is,
be,
you know, half of Southern Dallas.
Right.
The other thing I'll say, I mean, the phrase that you use, just to be very frank, is a phrase that I hear from friends in the African American community all the time. You got to be twice as good to get half the credit. And that is definitely true of this development. There have literally been murders at North Park in the parking lot. Nobody cares. Everybody flocks back there. If there's a hubcap stolen in the Redbird parking lot, there's a Channel 11 news copter overhead. Yeah. Crime at Redbird, you know. So we have to be really careful. There is no room for error. And that is both, you know, literal, but it's also a real metaphor for the state of racial dynamic in this country. And for me personally, this has been an incredibly eye-opening experience, and I understand perfectly well that I'll never understand fully, but the amount of let me put it this way, this has exposed me about as up close and personal as I'm ever going to be able to get to the fact that race plays a role in everything in this society, everything. And a lot of the ambivalences and trepidations that businesses have about coming to Redbird are definitely steeped in implicit or sometimes explicit racial bias. Everything from someone saying to me, oh, you should get a grocery store. And I'll say, yeah, we're trying to get a grocery store. Oh, I think an Aldi would be phenomenal. Like, well, we're thinking more like a Whole Foods. Whole Foods?
Yeah.
What do they need that for?
Little code in there.
Yeah, like, what do you mean, who's they? And what do you mean, what do they need that for? And there are 1,000 examples.
Yeah.
And so you're right. We do have to work twice as hard to get half the credit, and nothing can go wrong. And that is a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
That is a lot of pressure.
Terrence, as a black man that's from Dallas, what's your perspective on the North-South? We talked about the economic divide, but there's a racial divide too. What's your perspective as a native here?
You know, I guess, sadly, you know, something that I was accustomed to, you know, the first time that I even ventured north of downtown was after I graduated from college. So,
in that,
yeah, so a lot of people in Oak Cliff, that's their same experience. And so, you know, going to TCU opened my eyes up to sort of the real disparity of Southern Dallas.
You can feel like you're in North Dallas. Sometimes
right.
A TCU is a TCU
yeah,
graduate
exactly,
as well.
Exactly. So, you know, the city still has a way to go. And I think in light of the George Floyd murder that, you know, there are opportunities for us to come together. I'm glad that we are really having meaningful conversations around diversity, equity, and inclusion. You know, I think Redbird has been a terrific example and model of how you can do impact investment in communities and do social good with making a return on your money. And so, you know, my hope is that we continue to see that momentum in Southern Dallas. Are we going to solve every problem overnight? Absolutely not. But I think starting to make strides in that direction will go a long way. And it's my hope that looking forward, we can see that Southern Dallas and Northern Dallas becomes just one Dallas. Mm-hmm. And that's my hope.
You know, Sharon Grigsby from your paper.
Sharon Grigsby, yeah.
What's that?
The great Sharon
the
Grigsby.
The great Sharon Grigsby wrote a really insightful piece when Starbucks opened at Redbird. And it was about how everyone who walked into the store was surprised. The white people from North Dallas generally walked in and were like, wow, something this nice in this area?
Yeah.
And the black people from the community walked in and thought, somebody built something this nice for us? And the whole column was about how sad it is that everyone was surprised by the idea. Everyone had cognitive dissonance about the idea of high quality in Southern Dallas for the people who live in Southern Dallas. And to me, that column encapsulated a lot of societal issues that we still have to work through. And my hope is that this development is a tiny step towards dispelling that surprise in everybody.
Well, I appreciate that. And one of the challenges that I think is interesting that you guys are trying to address, and you mentioned Chime earlier and that you've got Parkland and Southwestern there, is yes, there is economic diversity in Southern Dallas, but the reality is that there is a significant lack of capital and wealth in a huge portion of the population. And my sense is one of the strategies you guys are engaging is kind of trying to start the generation going by creating opportunity for people there. So maybe talk a little bit more about that. You've got to build wealth for them to create commerce for yourselves, essentially. I mean, isn't that right, Terrence? Sort of what's going on at Chime.
Yeah, I think the ethos of what we're trying to accomplish is just to improve the quality of life for the people in that community, whether it's access to better health care, if we can avoid a mother having to drive 30 miles to get to work each morning, if she can work and live in the same community, that drastically improves the quality of life, not only for her, but for her family. And so we are setting, hopefully, a foundation of that sort of change. And not only physically, but also psychologically. And so I think that's where we're starting to make some of those strides. I mean, the feedback I've received from the community has been overwhelming. Like, we're just so happy that someone would come and invest the way, and not only the investment of capital, but the investment of time and sweat and tears to make this a reality.
Yeah, what's been fun about this project is how if you have the right patience and you have the right strategy, a lot of things that are the right thing to do also turn out to be the economically smart thing to do. So you're right. Having 1,500 or 2,000 people in the building, all of whom are making at least a living wage, that is going to drive a lot of lunch purchases,
right. Yeah.
And Christmas purchases.
Hard to buy Starbucks if you don't make money that day.
Exactly. So there's an economic return on that, and also it's employing a lot of people. I mean, the day we held the job fair in the center court of Redbird for Chime, and 350 people walked out of there with living wage jobs that were 5 to 10 minutes from their house, it was one of the happiest, most joyous days I've ever had. And I wasn't even the one getting the job.
Yeah.
So, you know, we told our commercial real estate brokers, do not bring us a call center. Because call centers usually pay $9 or $10 an hour.
Right.
Do not do that. And they brought us one and said, this one's different. These guys pay living wages. So, you know, the other thing that's happening, by the way, is we're turning into not only a center of African American employment, but entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. A lot of the people who are looking to open restaurants or dental practices or what have you are from the community, are black members of the community, and they are going to own their businesses. And that's terrific. So the whole thing really works together well. It's just a lot of pieces coming together.
Well, as we kind of wind down our conversation here, the last thing I'd ask each of you is, you know, let's make a positive assumption that things progress in a positive way. What's next for you guys in Southern Dallas and Southern Dallas as a whole?
We're going to give you very different answers.
That's good.
I'm a one and done. My wife and I put a lot of our own money in this. If it goes well, I'm not going to become a serial real estate developer. And I'd like to own this for a long time. And I'd like to continue to see it develop over the next 20 years. But it's not a model that I'm personally going to replicate. And you know, I'm almost an empty nester. I got 2 more years of that, so probably something more low key.
All right, we're going to hold you to that. We're going to see in 10 years whether you get. They keep pulling me back in.
Yeah, I actually see Redbird as a model, as I mentioned earlier, for other malls across the U.S. And so, you know, I'm beginning to explore other communities that are experiencing similar challenges that we discovered here at Redbird, and how we can come and add value. There's other areas of Southern Dallas that I like to develop in as well. So, you know, I'm excited to see what the future holds.
Well, look, it's critically important, and for anybody who's listening, go down to Redbird Mall, go see these entrepreneurial shops. It's a really great day trip. It's a fun place to be. It's a neat place to check out and to understand that your city isn't exactly what you might think it is if you never get down to a place that's both beautiful and changing and growing in positive ways. Hey, thanks a lot, guys, for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you,
guys. You know, Southern growth and opportunity is what leads us to maybe our full potential, right, Rudy?
Amen.
To our audience, thank you for listening to The Deep Side of Dallas. Feel free to email us at deepside@dallasnews.com with questions, comments, and ideas. For Rudy Bush, I'm Paul Corliss. We'll talk to you soon. The Deep Side of Dallas is presented by the Dallas Morning News and the University of North Texas System. Our show is produced by Aiden Barrett.
If you like what you heard today, please follow the Dallas Morning News wherever you get your podcasts. You'll also get our daily news roundup and special audio reports. And if you have questions, comments, or guest ideas, we want to hear from you. Just email us at deepside@dallasnews.com. Until next time, I'm Rudy Bush.
And I'm Paul Corliss. Thanks for listening.